The minute Tony Stark stepped up to the podium, his stomach jumped. He looked around, puzzled. He'd conducted dozens of press conferences here, in the main Stark Enterprises press room. Its white walls and wide picture window were almost as familiar to him as his Homerus lab. Today the room was filled to overflowing, extra folding chairs crammed around the sides of the room, reporters milling about. Suddenly he realized, the last time the press hall had been this full was 2 years ago, when unplanned, on impulse, he'd revealed to the world his secret life as Iron Man.
Have we been here before?
Tony glanced back at Pepper Potts, standing ramrod straight just behind him, her expression professionally blank. Happy Hogan flanked her on one side, with the U.S. Secretary of Homeland Security on the other. Pepper frowned at Tony, gave him a mock nudge forward. Then Tony noticed another similarity to that other press conference. In the front row, her lovely legs crossed, sat Christine Everhart of Vanity Fair. When his eyes settled on her, she cocked her head and shot him a challenging look. He flashed her a quick smile and looked down. He briefly consulted his cue cards, then tossed them onto the podium.
Usually when I stand up in front of a group of people, I begin with, "My name is Tony and I'm an alcoholic."
At least they weren't hostile.
This is different, of course. And yet, it's oddly similar.
He paused for effect, took a quick sip of seltzer.
Now, one of the first things you learn in recovery is that you have to come clean with people, on every level. I started that process 2 years ago. My identity as Iron Man is a matter of public record. So are my taxes, my family history, and a painfully detailed record of my personal failings. My life isn't just an open book. It's practically an open-source electronic text released under the Creative Commons license. But there's something people who don't have my problem often fail to understand. An alcoholic doesn't seek help when things are going well for him. Some of us have to hit bottom. Others reach a point where the lifestyle, the cumulative effects on himself and other people, become too much to bear. And still others experience a moment of clarity, a brief, vivid glimpse of his future, of the terrible fate that awaits him if changes aren't made. Ladies and gentlemen, Stamford was my moment of clarity. I have a lot in my life to feel ashamed of, but I'm very proud of my career as a superhero. I've saved thousands of lives. I put hundreds of dangerous criminals behind bars and stopped dozens of catastrophes before they could happen. I founded the Avengers, the world's foremost superhero team, whose long record of good work speaks for itself. No, please don't clap. I don't want your applause today. That's not why I'm here. Because another lesson I've learned is that deciding not to take a drink is not the end of an alcoholic's journey toward the light. It's barely step one. And for me, for the superhuman community I'm proud to be a part of, my decision to go public, to reveal the details of my life to you, was step one. This, today, is the next step.
His throat was dry. He swept his gaze around the room, taking in the sea of reporters, scribbling and tapping furiously on note-taking devices.
Superhumans, metahumans, heroes, villains, whatever you call them, they have proliferated enormously in the past decade. Some of them are born with superior physical and mental abilities. Others receive their powers through accidental means. Some, like me, have developed technological methods of enhancing our natural gifts. Some, having no actual powers, take their lives into their hands by donning costumes and taking to the streets. And still others are actual alien beings, either full-blooded or partly human. We live in a frightening, uncertain world. Wars rage in the Middle East and elsewhere. Fear of terrorism has not abated. All over this country, families face the threat of economic ruin, the loss of the American dream that has always been this country's promise. The dream that has been so very good to me personally. So I stand here today, one man, to pledge to you, I will do what I can to make the world just a tiny bit less frightening. I can't solve the world economy, and I can't do much about suitcase nukes or biological attacks. But I can and will solve the problem of superhuman weapons of mass destruction. From this day forward, any man, woman, or alien being who takes to the streets or skies, who seeks to use his or her natural or artificial gifts in a public setting, must perform the following steps. He must first register online with the Department of Homeland Security, a quick and painless process. Among the information required, the applicant's real name, address, 24-hour contact information, level of experience, and the extent of his superhuman abilities, if any. That application will be swiftly evaluated by myself and the Homeland Secretary. Depending on our evaluation, several things may happen next. The person may be approved for metahuman activity under the terms of the Superhuman Registration Act. She will be given a contract, apprised firmly of the guidelines of appropriate behavior, and issued a SHIELD affiliate's badge. She will also receive a salary commensurate with her experience and skill, along with medical benefits, all under the oversight of the federal government and the International SHIELD Charter. If the applicant is less experienced, a conditional license may be issued instead. This will allow him to practice his abilities after, and only after, he has completed an intensive 8-week course at one of several training facilities being established by SHIELD. These facilities are top secret and located far from any major population center, so there's no danger to civilians during the training process. Once the applicant has completed the course, he will be evaluated by a board of experienced superheroes. If he is deemed responsible and competent in the use of his powers, a full license will be issued. If not, he will have the option of retaking the training course or retiring from the process. Of course, there will be those applicants who pose a clear or potential danger to the public, either through recklessness, lack of moral character, or the sheer uncontrollable nature of their power. They will be denied the license to practice their abilities. This, we believe, is only fair and just. A man may possess the knowledge of how to build an atomic bomb, but that doesn't give him the right to assemble one in the middle of Times Square. Believe me, I learned that one at age 9.
This was working. They were really with him.
Okay, I'm going to take a few questions now, and then I have a surprise for you. But before you ask anything, let me remind you that none of this is my decision. It's the law. It's been voted on duly by Congress and signed into law by the President. He has asked me personally to oversee the implementation of the Superhuman Registration Act, and I have accepted. This is my privilege and my duty, in more ways than one.
Mr. Stark! Mr. Stark, question for you, Mr. Stark!
Yes, Jerry.
What's the situation with supervillains, Mr. Stark?
Well, if they choose to register, they'll obviously fall into that third category. They'll be refused a license to operate. Unless, that is, they show both a desire to reform and a willingness to undergo training. Believe it or not, we have reached out to some high-profile offenders and are beginning a dialogue.
Even if they're wanted for crimes?
There are a few cases that will receive special treatment, but that's a very rare situation. We fully expect most supervillains to fail to register, which automatically places them in violation of the law. I can't go into details about our plans in that area without tipping off those very same criminals, but I will say this. We're developing radically new and stunningly effective methods of both capturing villains who refuse to register and of holding them securely. Melissa.
What about superheroes? Not villains, but those who are publicly known to have stopped dangerous criminals, to have saved lives in the past. What happens if they don't register? It sounds as though they'll be treated the same as the villains you just described. Is that true?
Tony stared straight ahead for just a moment.
It is.
Mr. Stark.
Christine Everhart stood up, her dark eyes boring into Tony. He swallowed, suddenly nervous again.
Mr. Stark, I think the public will want to know something. Why should a vigilante, a self-styled superhero, receive a salary and federal benefits when so many regular Americans are out of work?
No, that's a very good question, Chris, Ms. Everhart. First off, only those heroes who are approved and agree to public oversight will receive such benefits. Second, you should know that the Senate debated this very point at length, and they decided that the carrot of salary and benefits was the most effective tool in recruiting a maximum number of superhumans to the program quickly. But on a larger point, I don't think we Americans are at our best when we ask, why should my neighbor receive this? I think we're much better served to ask, how can more Americans prosper the way my neighbor has? That's how we build a better society. That's my goal here today, and every day I step through the doors of Stark Enterprises.
But Everhart remained standing, her mouth twisted into a frown.
Follow-up? Since you brought up Stark Enterprises, isn't the new law going to bring in an enormous windfall of new government contracts to this company? A company that you own. A company that has already benefited enormously from the post-9/11 boom in homeland security spending?
Ms. Everhart, as you know, Stark Enterprises no longer manufactures munitions. That's another promise I made to the world, and one I intend to keep as we move forward. However, yes, we are of course a partner to the United States government in the war against terror, superhuman and otherwise. And I would be naive to deny that that connection, that partnership, is a major reason why the president has asked me to oversee this program. The safety and security of the American people, that's the top priority of the current administration, of Stark Enterprises, and of Anthony Stark himself. I see no conflict there.
The Secretary of Homeland Security stepped forward, leading the applause. Everhart sat down, glaring. Guess he wouldn't get another night with her. Then again, you never knew.
One more. Yes, Dan.
I got a question. How much does that suit cost, Tony?
A lot.
Tony gestured to Pepper, and she handed him a briefcase.
But not as much as this one.
He clicked open the latch and held out the briefcase over the podium. The gleaming red and yellow helmet of Iron Man popped up, surrounded by the neatly folded metal mesh of the bodysuit, gauntlets and boots tucked neatly in the corners.
This is my job. This is what I do, who I am. I built this suit with my own two hands over the course of a lot of years. And that's why I'm standing before you today, why I've agreed to administer this law, so that everyone in this country will have the same opportunity, the same freedom, the same security to work their tails off and build a bright, shiny future that I have been so privileged to enjoy. And on that note, I want to introduce you to a very important woman. Ms. Miriam Sharp lost her son in the tragic Stanford incident, and it was she who made me aware of my own complicit guilt in that event. I owe her reparations, and she's become my conscience in this whole endeavor, as well as the spokeswoman for civilian rights on this issue. Please give Ms. Sharp a big hand.
The room rose to its feet. Miriam Sharp stepped out, confident and smiling. She'd undergone a subtle makeover since the funeral. Her suit was neatly tailored, her makeup meticulously applied, but she still looked like an ordinary housewife. The kindly mother next door.
Thank you, Mr. Stark. Thank you just so much.
No, Miss Sharp. Thank you.
Tony glanced up, then hastily positioned Miss Sharp next to him. He gestured toward the ceiling.
And you know, I don't think we need any major introduction for the amazing Spider-Man.
Spider-Man swung down gracefully, trailing a web line behind. Tony stepped aside, and Spidey moved forward.
Thanks. Really, it's really inspiring to hear Tony say all that, and to see how strongly his message resonates with you guys. Makes this all a lot easier. Well, a little easier. See, the Registration Act gives us a choice. We can go the route Captain America advocates and leave people with powers completely unchecked, or we can go legitimate and earn back a little public trust.
He glanced back at Tony, who nodded reassuringly.
I'm proud of what I do, of who I am, and I'm here to prove it. My name is Peter Parker, and I've been Spider-Man since I was 15 years old.
Tony put his arm around him.
Thanks, Peter.
He exchanged a long, grateful glance with the young man, then turned to the crowd.
So, any questions?
More coffee, Mr. Hendrick?
K Captain America frowned, adjusted his tie. The fake mustache felt itchy on his lip.
Mr. Hendrick?
He looked up, saw the young waitress holding out a glass coffee pot.
I'm fine.
You better get some game, Hendrick.
Bill Foster leaned across the table and tweaked the name tag on Cap's work shirt. Four of them sat at the table, Cap, Goliath, Daredevil, and Luke Cage, all in various types of disguise. Goliath wore a worn leather jacket. Daredevil was almost unrecognizable in short white shirt, vest, and tinted, trendy glasses.
My name is Brett Hendrick. I'm a security supervisor at a shopping mall in Queens.
That's it. Now, my name is Cooper Payton, and I'm an electrical engineer from Long Island.
Victor Tekler, community outreach worker based in Harlem. Man, I'm still not sure about that. I'm a West Coast kid.
Bigger men than you have started out as community organizers. Cage?
Luke Cage looked up from his notes. His massive, muscular frame was crammed into a black suit, and he seemed distinctly uncomfortable.
What kind of name is Rockwell Dodsworth? And sweet Christmas, IT consultant for a major international finance corporation? I asked you to get me something cool, like a race car driver, music producer maybe.
This is what my contacts had available.
Matt risked a lot to get us these new identities. He could be disbarred for this.
Oh yeah, that's what I'm worried about.
Besides, the IDs aren't important. They're just a place to go to ground when we're not doing the important work.
I'm actually getting into the new secret identity thing. I'm experimenting with new foods, new favorite movies, new bands.
Cap studied the blind adventurer for a moment. They'd been underground for almost 3 weeks now, a difficult time of adjustment. But the experience had apparently energized Daredevil.
Never mind. I'm just still sore from that beatdown we gave the Sinister Six yesterday.
You're sore? Man, I had to grow to 18 feet to trip up the Rhino.
That was good work, and we're only just getting started. Right, Cap?
Sorry. Just thinking about an appointment I had to break with a kid from the Make-A-Wish Foundation. I told him we'd play baseball in his yard today, but the place is probably crawling with Tony's cape killers.
That sucks.
It's the little things they've stolen from us with this registration garbage. The little things that make us who we are.
Yeah, you got that right. Hendrick.
Zip it, Rockwell. Here comes our waitress.
The waitress put plates on the table, and the four men set to it, as if they hadn't eaten in weeks.
I still can't believe Spider-Man. I mean, you think Tony Stark is controlling him or something? That new costume?
Tony wouldn't stoop to that. It wouldn't satisfy his ego. He wants everyone to agree with him, to see the pure light of reason behind his actions.
And I know Peter. He's impressionable. That day in Stamford, I could already see he was under Tony's thumb.
Strategically, it's a brilliant move. Nobody's guarded his secret identity more tightly than Spider-Man. His unmasking is a powerful message to all the costumes still sitting on the fence.
Cap's and Goliath's phones went off. Cap glanced at the small screen and rose quickly to his feet.
What's up?
Petrochemical plant on fire over by the river. They says there's 300 or 400 people trapped inside.
Cap intercepted the startled waitress.
Oh.
Keep the change, ma'am. And thanks for a wonderful meal.
She looked down at the $100 bill in her hand.
Wow. Thanks, Mr. Hendrick.
Call me Brett.
Cage opened the door to the restaurant's back alley, boarded up windows on the buildings nearby.
Hawkeye, what's your sitch?
Just trying to train these kids. You want us on that call?
Yep, bring everyone along. Falk?
On my way. Got Tigra, Cloak, and Dagger with me.
Roger.
Emergency distress call, sneaking into alleys, changing into costume?
Goliath smiled, shrugging off his leather jacket.
I hate to say it, but I'm starting to enjoy this.
Green smoke rose from the Geffen Myers petrochemical plant, dark and ominous in the twilight gloom. Cap could smell it from blocks away. The plant building faced the water, so details of the disaster were hard to make out from the street. A ring of local police cars surrounded the building, lights flashing. Cap hastily arranged a rendezvous in a parking lot across the street. When everyone was assembled, he pulled Wiccan and Cloak aside. They both looked nervous, unsure.
You two are our teleporters. People may be dying inside the plant. We can't get past that line of cops any other way. Can you carry us all between the two of you?
Well, I can get my crew in. Probably two or three more.
Cloak?
Cloak looked around, scared. His girlfriend, Dagger, took his hand.
I'll do it, sir.
Cap, Tigra, Falcon, Wiccan, and the Young Avengers materialized inside first. The plant's roof had been ripped off, and several explosions had apparently torn up the floor. Small fires raged, water spouted from severed pipes. One whole side of the building had been blasted open to the pier, where a loading dock lay splintered and destroyed, its stump falling off into the water. Green smoke wafted through the air, forming toxic patches all over.
Man, this place stinks.
In the middle of the room, a dark shroud swirled into being. Cap tensed and watched as Hawkeye, Daredevil, Cage, Goliath, and Dagger all tumbled out, shivering with intense cold. Dagger had done this countless times before.
It's okay. The chill wears off pretty quick.
The shadow swirled about, resolving itself into the dark form of Cloak himself. He staggered, dazed for a moment. Dagger walked up before him, glowing, and held out her hands. Light blazed from her into Cloak's tired form, vanishing into the darkness of his being, revitalizing him. Cap shook his head. Those two had nothing but each other. Cloak relied on Dagger for his very survival. How could you ask two young people like that to register, to turn over their entire lives to the government?
All present.
Daredevil bent down and picked up something from the floor.
Huh. Silver dollar.
Something's wrong. How many workers did the report say?
300 or 400.
Goliath frowned at a handheld analyzer.
I'm not getting any radio signals out of this place at all.
Goliath stared down at the floor.
What is it?
Then they all saw it. A fallen wall stone with the chiseled words, Geffen Myers, a division of Stark Enterprises.
Emergency evac! It's a trap!
Too late. Oh. Tranquilizer darts rained down out of the sky. Tigra leapt away. Falcon took to the air, and Hawkeye notched an arrow in his bow. But the tranquilizers only struck two members, Wiccan and Cloak.
Tyrone!
Dagger ran to Cloak. Cap whipped his head upward. 30 feet up, silhouetted against the clouds, at least 6 heavy shield copters hung in the sky, their engines muffled up to this point by Stark stealth technology. One of the copters pivoted, and a gunman loomed into view on its side, moonlight flashing against his weapon's barrel.
Of course it's a trap. How else were we going to get you all in one place?
Cap whirled, raising his shield. The gleaming figure of Iron Man wafted up over a shattered half wall, his repulsor rays glowing with power. Then Spider-Man was behind Tony.
Don't do it, Flags.
Cap motioned his people back. They fell in behind him and shrank back toward the open, river-facing side of the plant. The rest of Tony Stark's forces marched up behind their leader, looming into view through the slowly clearing green haze. Ms. Marvel, the massive She-Hulk, 3/4 of the Fantastic Four, Reed and Sue Richards, and Ben Grimm, the Thing, Black Widow. Dagger looked up from Cloak's unmoving body.
What have you done to him?
Just a little tranquilizer, kid. Make sure nobody gets teleported away.
Spider-Man cocked his head, looked upward.
Skybird One, you got us covered?
Oh yeah. Just give a word. Please, give a word.
Mr. Stark, we are in position and ready to end this.
We do this my way, Commander, or you can abort right now.
Director Hill to all airborne units. Hold your fire. Repeat. Hold your fire and await further orders.
All eyes were on Iron Man and Captain America now. Cap squared his shoulders and marched straight up to Iron Man.
Going soft, Tony?
We didn't come here to arrest you, Cap. I've talked Shield into offering you one final chance at amnesty.
You mean surrender. No thanks.
Come on, Cap. When we fight each other, the only people who win are the bad guys. This goes against every principle you ever believed in.
The new costume, with its gleaming metal eyes, gave Spider-Man a much less human countenance than ever before. Cap could almost picture the young man inside transforming, like an insect in a cocoon, into a new version of Iron Man.
Don't talk to me about principles, Spider-Man. I saw your little stunt on TV. Is your Aunt May happy that the Vulture has her zip code now?
Why don't you ask the mommies and daddies in Stamford if they think Captain America's still fighting the good fight?
Cap tensed, and the two men stared at each other for a long moment. Then Tony moved between them, lifting his helmet's front plate up to reveal his face.
Cap, please. I know you're angry, and I know this is an enormous change from the way we've always worked. But we aren't living in 1945 anymore.
Tony gestured behind Cap, addressing the assembled resistance.
The public doesn't want masks and secret identities. They want to feel safe when we're around. We've lost their confidence, their respect. This is the only way to win it back. You've known me half my adult life, Cap. You know I wouldn't do this unless I believed in it with all my heart. I don't want to fight you. None of us does. All I ask is, just let me tell you my grand plan for the 21st century.
Atop his elongated neck, Reed Richards' head snaked into the conversation.
It really is extraordinary.
Sue Richards, Cap noticed, was staring at her husband. She didn't look happy, neither did Ben.
5 minutes.
Tony held out his metal gauntleted hand.
Will you give me that?
Cap turned to survey his troops. Cage looked very grim. Tigra's eyes were wide, almost feral. Goliath had eased up to 8 feet in height, but he was hanging back. Dagger still knelt over her fallen partner, and the young Avengers had gathered around Wiccan's limp form. Daredevil leaned against a wall, alone, flipping his newfound coin up and down. Cap's two closest lieutenants, Hawkeye and the Falcon, stood together. They both cocked their heads at him. Your play.
5 minutes.
That's all I need.
Slowly, Cap reached out and clasped Tony's hand.
All right! Way to go, Wings! Didn't I tell you this was all gonna work out?
Then Tony yanked his hand back, stared at it.
What the hell?
Blue lightning shot out of his hand, arcing up and around his metallic form.
Ah!
His limbs began to jerk uncontrollably. Cap took a step back, pointing at a small device on Tony's gauntlet.
Old line shield electron scrambler. Another thing Fury gave me years ago.
Why?
In case you ever went over to the wrong side.
Spider-Man started to move in.
No!
Tony motioned him back as he writhed on the ground, struggling to regain control of his armor. The other power fighters on Tony's team, She-Hulk, The Thing, Ms. Marvel, stood their ground waiting for a signal, while the Resistance flanked their leader.
Your grand plan sounds more like 1940s Germany to me. What exactly do you plan to do with people who refuse to register?
You don't understand!
He struggled to rise, his face still visible, his helmet sparking blue above his forehead.
I understand one thing. You took down two of my boys.
Tony's head whipped back, blood trailing through the air. The plant exploded into violence. Ms. Marvel rose up into the air, firing off power blasts. The Falcon soared up to meet her. Hawkeye notched his bow.
All right, showtime, kids.
Urging the young Avengers forward. But the Thing and She-Hulk formed a linebacker-style barricade, blocking their way. Goliath grew to 12 feet, raising his arms menacingly against all comers. Powerful light knives shot out from Dagger's hands, sparking on contact with Spider-Man's metal suit. Daredevil and the Black Widow circled each other, scuttling up and down half walls in a dark ballet. Daredevil fired off his billy club, narrowly missing her head. Cap kicked down hard on Tony's back and heard a power relay snap. Tony's eye lens flashed bright as a final short circuit disabled his armor. Then he was still.
Watch the skies, people!
But when Cap looked up, the shield copters were hovering higher, arcing up and away. Cap frowned, then jumped back just as Tigra landed in front of him, slashing and cutting at the muscular form of She-Hulk. The two women grappled fiercely. They rolled away, and Cap found himself face to face with Reed Richards.
Cap, please!
Something caught Cap's eye.
Huh.
He reached out and snatched a tiny transceiver out of Reed's ear.
What are you...
Reed grabbed for it, but was too slow.
Captain, no!
Cap sprinted toward the far side of the plant building. He pulled back the edge of his headgear and thumbed the stolen transceiver into his ear.
All airborne units, do not engage. Repeat, do not move in unless perimeter is breached. Prepare to activate Nifflehelm protocol at my... Strike that. At Iron Man's command. Until then, hold your position.
The Thing pasted Hulkling across the jaw.
Ah! I don't want to fight you guys! Why can't you just do like you're told?
There was chaos all around. Hawkeye made his way over to Cap, firing off arrows with every step.
We outnumber them, Cap, but they got a lot more muscle on their side. And copters.
Cap nodded grimly, backing toward the wall of the chemical plant.
Goliath!
He gestured upward to Goliath, who now stood 15 feet tall. Goliath nodded.
Everybody! Head for the water!
Then the Thing slammed into one of Goliath's legs, while She-Hulk body-rammed the other. Goliath toppled and fell.
Cap!
Patriot stumbled over to Cap, flinging his throwing star weapons behind him at Spider-Man. The web-slinger followed right on Patriot's tail, moving swiftly on those metallic tentacles, furious and uncharacteristically silent. The stars bounced harmlessly off his red and gold uniform. Cap raised his shield to throw it, and Spider-Man vanished.
Well, where'd he go?
Spider-Man's wearing a new suit designed by Stark.
Cap's eyes scanned the air furiously.
It's bulletproof, equipped with glide function and stealth mode.
You forgot butt kicking.
Spidey had appeared in the air just inches from Cap. Cap dodged to the side, narrowly avoiding a burst of spider webbing. But Spidey's tentacles flashed through the air, wrenching Cap's shield out of his hands. Spider-Man kicked, and Cap fell backward, rolled with it, and came up in a crouch, looking up for Spider-Man. But all he saw, far above, was the Falcon.
Cap, look out!
And then, Iron Man was on him. Tony grabbed Cap by the shoulders and lifted him up into the air. His helmet down now, red eyes blazing with power, every inch the unstoppable Avenger.
Been improving the reboot time on my armor, Cap. You impressed?
Tony slammed him clear through a wall. Bright phosphine swam before Cap's eyes. He raised his arms like a boxer, shielding his bloody face, but a servo-enhanced roundhouse blow from Iron Man blasted into his stomach. He dropped to the ground, kicking out blindly, and missed.
You're wasting your time. This armor has recorded every punch you've ever thrown. It knows your next move before you do.
Cap tasted blood where a tooth used to be. The world was slipping away.
Situation spiraling out of control.
At first, Cap thought he was hallucinating, but then he remembered the shield transceiver.
Three Decimon K-Killer units surrounding the perimeter.
Hold them on standby. Signal coming in from Stark. Activate Niflhel Protocol.
I'm sorry, Cap. Really, I am.
Then, behind Tony, the heavens seemed to light up. A massive bolt of lightning stabbed down, sending the Falcon and Ms. Marvel spinning through the air. It struck down right in the center of the chemical plant, splintering concrete, knocking Cage and Hawkeye off their feet. Cap shielded his eyes from the blinding light. When his vision cleared, the sight he saw shocked him to his core. A column of light rose from the floor of the chemical plant, lightning flashing out from it in all directions. And at the center of it, hammer held high, stood an angry, imperious form.
Thor?
When the fighting broke out, Sue Richards had fallen back on her usual opening gambit. She became invisible. She'd been reluctant to come to the chemical plant at all. Reed had assured her several times that Tony had everything planned, that nothing could go wrong. He said it was important that they all be there, to show support, to prove to Captain America that most heroes believed in the Registration Act. He had asked her to think of their children, of the kind of world she wanted Franklin and Valeria to grow up in. Then Reed had vanished, spirited up to the shield helicarrier in the company of Tony Stark. I'll meet you on site, he said. And then, too quickly as always, love you. Now Sue stood, backed up against a cracked concrete wall, watching a reborn thunder god call down lightning from the heavens. Thor's hammer cracked and flashed, and rain began to sheet down onto the ruined factory. Sue was still invisible, and her earpiece was tuned to Tony's frequency.
Everyone, stay back!
She watched through driving rain as She-Hulk, Ms. Marvel, and Spider-Man backed away from the source of the lightning. She couldn't see Cap, but some of his resistance, Luke Cage, Dagger, Patriot, and Hulkling of the Young Avengers, moved in slowly toward the Thunder God. Falcon dropped down out of the sky.
Thor?
Thor turned dark, flashing eyes toward him. Sue thought that there was something different about Thor. He looked bigger than before, massive, coiled with power, malevolent.
Thor, what are you doing? It's me, man. Falcon.
Hawkeye frowned, swept rain out of his eyes.
We all thought you were dead, big guy.
Thor didn't speak, just narrowed his eyes in anger, in godlike distaste. He raised his hammer again. And hurled it incredibly fast into the assembled Resistance members. It knocked Falcon and Hawkeye off their feet. Tigra leapt away just in time. The hammer soared on, arcing upward as if nothing had interrupted its flight. The hammer struck Dagger straight on, sending her flying into Speed and Patriot. The hammer flew back to Thor's hand.
I got this!
Luke Cage stepped forward. His skin, Sue remembered, was steel hard, but not hard enough. The flying hammer struck him with tremendous force, and he flew backward, clear out of the factory. He soared out over the water, massive arms flailing. Sue looked around frantically, searching for Reed. There he was, on the far side of the chemical plant, a blur of stretching blue, eyeing every move like a biologist watching a new type of microorganism being born. Sue allowed herself to become visible and waved to him. Reed caught her eye, tried to smile, and motioned her toward him. She willed herself invisible again. She started toward him, skirting around the action, keeping a careful distance from Thor. As she circled the edge of the factory, she caught glimpses of several mini-dramas, each illuminated by lightning flashes. At the top of a disused chemical urn, Daredevil looked down at the Widow, disappointment etched in the set of his mouth. Daredevil tried to dodge, but one of Black Widow's bolts struck him. He fell from his perch. When she caught him, her expression was a mixture of contempt and regret. Over in the corner where Cloak and Wiccan lay drugged and unconscious, Hulkling, the Young Avengers resident strongman, leapt up and took the bolt of lightning before it could reach his friends. He had a healing factor, Sue remembered. Or so she thought. Elsewhere, Dagger pulled herself up off the ground, grimacing in pain, her tiny frame dripping wet.
Oh my God, this is wrong. We've got to get out of here. This is really, really wrong.
She's right. Something is very, very wrong.
Sue looked up and around, searching for Reed again. When did the world turn into this? The Resistance was beginning to regroup. Patriots' speed and stature formed a line, protecting their fallen comrades.
We need to retreat! We don't have the firepower for this!
Tony, where's Tony during all this?
Then Thor seemed to lurch forward, throwing all his weight against his hammer and slamming it into the ground like a pile driver. The floor seemed to explode upward in a blinding flash of light. The Resistance members were closest, so they were the hardest hit. But Sue saw Reed's flailing body whip up into the air too. Her force field kicked on by instinct, blunting the worst of the impact. But she too found herself knocked off her feet. Not 8 feet away from where she landed, she saw Captain America, bloody, battered, his face twisted in pain. Lying propped against the wall, rain puddling around his body, with the powerful form of Iron Man standing over him. Spider-Man stood half-crouched, just behind Tony.
Cap, please, don't get up. I don't want to hit you again.
Cap moved a hand to his back to brace himself. He tried to rise, and failed.
Your jaw's practically hanging off. Just surrender and I'll get you medical attention. Shield is medic standing by.
Shield.
With great difficulty, Cap rose to his feet, raising roomy, furious eyes toward Tony.
You really think I'm going down to some pampered punk like you?
Sue wanted to say something. She should stop this, but she felt helpless, almost paralyzed. This, she realized, was what it had come to. An irreconcilable battle between Iron Man and Captain America, each of them absolutely convinced his cause was just. This battle would continue until one of them was dead.
I got this, Tony.
Spider-Man moved in toward Cap, but Tony shook his head, backed up a step, pressed a stud on his glove.
Iron Man to all points. Activate your audio blocks.
Then he turned back to Cap.
This is gonna hurt.
The sound seemed to stab right through Sue's inner ear. She fell to her knees, clutching her head. Then she felt Reed's long, winding fingers dance across her face. He reached into her ear, flipped a switch on her transceiver.
Oh my God, I'm sorry. I didn't have time to brief you on that part of the plan. It's a good thing you became visible when the frequency wave hit. I'm glad you're okay.
She stared at him for a moment, his familiar, sheepish smile. Then she heard the others. The Resistance members writhed on the ground. They had no protection against Tony's aural assault. Captain America rose to his knees, his mouth wide open in agony.
You're a tough old bird, I'll give you that. This frequency puts the human brain into shutdown. But look at you, you're still trying to get up. I'll make this quick. Just close your eyes, and you'll wake up in our new detention center.
Oh my God. This is horrible.
Oh, I don't like it either. But at least this way there's no broken bones.
Reed turned to look at Thor, standing majestic and cruel in the center of the carnage. Rain dripped off his long golden locks, barely touching him.
Thor, stands down! The S.H.I.E.L.D. cleanup squad can handle things from here.
Peter, take charge of the prisoners. We need to inventory them before
Look out!
Tony whipped his head up, too late. Goliath loomed over them, at least 20 feet high, taller than Sue had ever seen him before. He had no protection against the frequency wave, but he held above his head a massive detached chemical vat, dripping with green liquid. He dropped his burden straight on top of Iron Man. As the chemicals washed over Iron Man, Dagger, her eyes wide in agony, fired a volley of blinding light bolts at the vat.
Good God! Have they killed Tony?
As the fireball subsided, at its center, fading into view, crouched the silhouetted form of Iron Man.
I'm okay. A little singed.
And then Sue noticed the whining in her ears was gone. The fireball hadn't killed Tony, but it had deactivated his frequency wave. The Resistance were climbing to their feet. Captain America raised an arm.
Attack!
Then he slumped forward and fell to the ground. Once again, the world exploded into flashing costumes and power blasts. Captain America lay still, face down on the concrete floor. Falcon called down to Hawkeye.
Hawk! Get to Cap! We gotta get him out of here!
Reed, we have to stop this.
I don't understand. I've already deactivated Thor.
What do you mean, deactivated?
Tony Stark staggered forward. The explosion had done his armor some damage.
Regroup! We've got him!
But Goliath's huge body had crouched down, grabbed at the jagged floor beneath the Avengers' feet, and pulled. They toppled and flew up into the air. Thor turned to watch the chaos. Slowly, he reached out with his hammer. Goliath turned to him.
Get ready for the shortest comeback in history, Thor!
Thor's hammer glowed bright, brighter than ever before. Lightning flashed forth from it. And punched a hole straight through Goliath's chest.
Oh my God.
Still invisible, Sue crept up to Goliath. She didn't care what Reed thought. She didn't care if S.H.I.E.L.D. grabbed her. She didn't even care if Thor's lightning flashed out again, claiming her as another victim. She touched Goliath's cold, meter-long hand, saw the smoke rising from the hole where his heart had been. The battles had stopped. Everyone stood very still, staring at the 20-foot corpse of a hero who had dared to defy the Superhuman Registration Act. Sue felt cold. All she could think of, the only thing that came to mind, was a phrase Tony Stark had uttered during his famous press conference.
Stamford was my moment of clarity.
This, she realized, was hers. The Resistance were scrambling around, traumatized. Falcon and Hawkeye had made their way to Captain America, scooping him up. The Young Avengers moved to join them, with Dagger close behind.
Fall back! Regroup! We gotta get out of here, or we're all dead!
Thor turned toward Falcon, raised his hammer again. Sue Richards, the Invisible Woman, founding member of the Fantastic Four, gritted her teeth, raised her arms, and erected the largest force field of her life. Thor's lightning sputtered against the field and stopped short. Iron Man and Spider-Man looked around, searching for some new enemy.
What the hell?
Behind the force field, the Resistance members were equally puzzled. Sue stepped outside her own force field, facing Thor, Iron Man, and Spider-Man directly. She willed the field behind her to full strength, and then became visible.
Susie? What are you doing?
Tony Stark looked from Reed to Sue, then back to Reed. Thor fixed Sue with a murderous glare, and began to raise his hammer.
Emergency shutdown code! Authorization Richard Wagner! 1833-1883!
Thor's eyes went blank. For the first time, his expression softened. The lightning energy faded, and the hammer slipped from his limp fingers. Sue gritted her teeth. The strain of maintaining this huge force field was enormous. She turned, glanced back at the Resistance.
Get out of here! Now!
Patriot gestured at the limp bodies of Wiccan, Hulkling, and Cloak.
What about them? Our wounded?
They lay out of range of the force field.
She's right.
We have to leave.
And the resistance began to disappear, moving back into the abandoned buildings on the other side of Sue's force barrier. At last, there was only the Falcon, still carrying their fallen leader's unconscious body.
Susan, thank you.
Then, they too were gone. Sue's power was invisibility, not teleportation. The Resistance would have to make their own escape, probably down through the sewers, but at least she'd given them a head start. To Sue's surprise, no one had made a move toward the rebels. Black Widow was busy bandaging up She-Hulk and Ms. Marvel. S.H.I.E.L.D. seemed confused, conflicted. Their copters wheeled up and about, surveying the landscape, but not moving to pursue. Tony's movements were still jerky, uncoordinated. Ben and Reed just stared at her. They seemed stunned, shell-shocked. Spider-Man sat crouched on a wall, staring at the smoking body of Goliath.
Sue! Darling, I...
Don't even speak to me. Not one damn word.
And then, Sue Richards vanished from sight. Data assaulted Tony Stark from all sides. Medical reports, routing checks on the new prisoners, statements from congressmen, reports on the initiative training camps being constructed in Arizona and elsewhere, funeral arrangements, hundreds of emails from reporters, mostly asking what the hell had gone down today on the west side of Manhattan. Beside Tony in the elevator, Reed Richards' head was bowed. Tony flipped his faceplate up, cutting off the data flow.
Reed, you all right? Reed?
Sorry, Tony. I was running those negative zone calculations in my head.
His eyes looked wide, haggard.
She'll come back, Reed.
Huh? Oh. I suppose so, yes. I'm mostly concerned about the procedures we've got in place for the new prisoners. Wiccan is powerful, and Daredevil can be quite devious.
I know.
You've got the transfer scheduled for later today, yes? Perhaps I should head straight for the Baxter building and make sure the portal's ready.
Soon, Reed. I need you here first.
Ah, yes.
He was haunted, Tony could see, not by problems with the detention center, and not by abstract calculations. Not even by his wife's betrayal. Though that would hit him soon enough. No, he was seeing the same thing Tony did in his mind's eye. Bill Foster struck dead by a lightning bolt through his chest. The doors opened straight into the Avengers Tower biolab. High ceilings, bright lights, screens and monitors, and medical tables everywhere. And superhumans. Black Widow, Spider-Man, and Ms. Marvel, her arm in a sling. Ben Grimm stood in back, uncharacteristically quiet. In the center of the room, the massive figure of Thor lay on a slab. His clear blue eyes stared straight up, unseeing. Dr. Hank Pym leaned over an incision in Thor's head, frowning.
Tony, what happened out there? I thought we were doing this so no one else got hurt.
Just a moment, Peter. Hank, any news?
Hank Pym glanced up from his work.
What?
His white lab coat stood out against the bright-colored costumes filling the room. He looked like he'd been crying.
Any news?
Hank laid down the scalpel, crossed to a TV monitor, and clicked it to life. The sound stayed muted, but an aerial view of the chemical plant appeared. Copters wove in and out of sight. Below, the various heroes scampered around like ants. Then, inevitably, Thor raised his hammer and blew a hole through Goliath. The image froze.
S.H.I.E.L.D. footage. He's been watching it compulsively.
Hank Pym had been a superhero himself. First as Ant-Man, then Giant-Man, and Yellowjacket. He was the first of the size-changing heroes, but in recent years he'd hung up his tights, preferring to concentrate on scientific research, including the Niflhel Protocol. Tony recalled that Bill Foster had once been Hank's lab assistant.
Hank, it's a tragedy. I'm sorry. I know you and Bill were friends.
Friends, yes. And I just watched a superhuman I helped create blow a hole straight through my friend.
Reed studied Thor.
I wonder why he behaved like that. Thor, I mean. Is he missing a human conscience? Does he need a human host to fuse with?
Why? Why? Maybe the problem is we weren't meant to clone a god!
Clone? Thor is a clone?
Tony grimaced. He cast his gaze across the assembled heroes, watching them as the revelation sank in.
How do you clone a god?
Hank sat down, lowered his head.
Very first meeting of the Avengers. Tony set it up. Had me grab a lock of hair from Thor. I was Ant-Man then. Shrank down so small I was microscopic. Thor thought he had fleas.
So, this...
Spider-Man picked up the hammer.
This isn't really Mjolnir? It's some copy. The hammer of Klor?
What?
Klor. Clone Thor. Get it?
Not funny, Peter.
Sorry.
They all looked to Tony for guidance, for assurance that they were on the right path. But they were shaken. This was a crucial moment, Tony realized. The whole registration movement could fall apart, right then and there. Everything depended on what he did in the next few minutes.
Peter, could you take the mask off? I'm asking, not ordering.
Peter, too, looked tired, sunken-eyed, and a bit ashamed.
Thank you. Now, I know this isn't exactly what any of you signed up for. Carol, how's your arm?
I'm fine. Some people got it much worse. She-Hulk is still in intensive care. She's recovering, though.
Good. I'm glad to hear that. Now, we're all thinking about the same thing. Bill Foster. His death was a tragedy, a horrible accident. The kind of thing that should never, ever happen, especially on our watch. But we all knew this wasn't going to be easy. And we knew there'd be battles along the way. I'll be blunt. Anyone who didn't expect a casualty here and there was deluding himself. We're talking about a major change in the lives of every metahuman on Earth. And that's what we have to remember. Bill Foster shouldn't have died, but his death is the price of what we're doing. If this process means another 900 civilians don't die as collateral damage in a super battle, then I hate to say it, but I can live with Bill's death. Not easily. And I won't sleep well tonight, but I can live with it.
Ms. Marvel nodded gravely. Black Widow cocked her eyebrow. Ben Grimm just leaned against a table, his expression even stonier than normal. Hank Pym stared at the clone, shaking his head.
Tony, I want to believe you. I know your intentions are good, but is this...
Peter gestured at the screen, which still showed the frozen image of Goliath's dead body.
Is that what's gonna happen? Every time someone doesn't register, doesn't follow the rules?
No, of course not. That's what the detention center's for.
Yeah, the detention center.
Peter looked Tony straight in the eye.
Think I could see that place, Tony.
Something shifted in the room, in the air. Some balance of power, of authority.
You wanted my sharp mind, right, boss?
Tony stared back at Peter for a moment, then he smiled.
Sure, Peter. Reed and I are headed over there now. You want to join?
Peter pulled down his mask, red and gold lenses popping into place over his eyes.
Yeah.
Hank, you've done enough here. Why don't you take a week off? Klor can wait on ice till you get back.
Reed touched Hank Pym on the back.
Sure.
Hank nodded, stood up, and trudged toward the door. He looked defeated, a shell of a man.
The rest of you, take what time you need, but check in at regular intervals. Things are only going to heat up from here on in, and I'm going to need every one of you.
Yes, of course.
Let's move, gentlemen. Project 42 awaits.
Something dark was growing inside Captain America. Something hard and angry, deep in his gut. Something he'd never felt before. Something he didn't like at all. It wasn't the death of Goliath, not exactly. Cap had lost men before, in war and in civilian battles. It always hurt, but it was a part of life. The life he'd chosen decades ago, when a scrawny orphan kid first volunteered for the wartime super soldier program. Falcon was wrapping a thick bandage around Cap's forehead.
Hey, hold still.
No, Cap realized, it wasn't the death. It was the way Bill Foster had died. Goliath had died as a direct result of Tony's actions. Tony Stark, the man Cap had called friend for years. Oh. Everything hurt. Tony had really done a number on him.
Well, you look like the mummy half escaped from his tomb. But you got a few teeth left.
Yeah, and I plan to use them.
Cap tugged at the electrodes fastened to his bandaged chest. The medical wing of Resistance headquarters was remarkably well outfitted. A technician in a white coat stood at the monitors. Like everyone they'd hired, she'd been personally vetted by at least two Resistance members. Hawkeye now entered the room, followed by Dagger, Stature, Speed, and Patriot. The kids looked shaken. So did Hawk.
How's the man?
Hawk, I need your help.
Cap stood, pulling off the electrodes.
Captain, please.
Sorry. We're gonna have to abandon this location. Tony's about to step up all his efforts to find us. Even an off-the-books shield base is just too risky.
Just hold on a minute. Cap, I think we should appeal for amnesty.
Amnesty? Are you insane? We just picked up another 14 supporters. Valkyrie, Nighthawk, Photon. Tony's losing allies by the minute.
And how many people did we lose? Hulkling, Daredevil, Cloak?
Hawkeye turned to Dagger, who'd lost the person closest to her in all the world.
Sorry, doll.
Hawk, what?
No, listen to me. Those guys are all on their way to whatever super gulag Reed Richards has been building.
And you're willing to let them get away with that?
They can do anything they want now. They've got Thor on their side.
That wasn't Thor. That was some Frankenstein's monster they grew for their superhero army. You didn't know Thor, girl. Don't think for a moment, not one moment, that he would have murdered a good man like Bill Foster.
Dagger shrank back. Cap immediately felt remorse. Snapping at a young girl? What was wrong with him?
Cap, I've been on the wrong side of the law before. Spent a lot of my life there. It sucks. You helped pull me out of that life. Hell, for a while, you and me practically were the Avengers. And you once said to me, when the law outnumbers and outguns you 20-1, there comes a time when you gotta stop fighting.
That's true when you're in the wrong. When you're right, you plant your feet in the ground and hold the damn hill.
I'm real sorry about Bill Foster. But he was dead the moment he thought he was bigger than the law.
Hawkeye.
Stop, Cap. I'm leaving. So whatever you do, don't tell me where you're planning on moving this base to.
I wouldn't tell you the time of day.
Good. Because you ought to be thinking about something else. The more people join your little underground club, the bigger the possibility you might have a mole in the ranks.
Cap said nothing, but the idea had occurred to him. Tony had managed to lure them to the chemical plant a little too easily.
What are you gonna do, Clint? Pull on those little jackboots and smack whoever they tell you to?
No. I'm gonna be a good guy.
Everyone stood staring. Then Stature turned.
Cassie! I'm sorry, Eli, but I don't want to wind up in some super jail like Hulkling. I got into this to fight villains, not cops or other superheroes.
Come on, Cass!
Tommy, you know how this is gonna end.
Stature glanced briefly at Cap.
He's just another old man scared of the future.
Go, if your freedom means so little to you. Eli, Tommy, what about you?
Patriot glanced at his teammate. Speed grinned back.
Duh.
We're in.
Dagger?
I want my partner back.
Good.
They gathered around him then, all looking to him for guidance, for leadership. For a moment, the dark thing in Cap's gut relaxed, lightened.
We've got a lot of work to do. Falk, notify all troops we're bugging out. I think Cage has a Harlem safe house we can use for a while. Dagger, see if anybody has any special knowledge regarding Stark Enterprise's security systems. Patriot, Speed, you talk to the new recruits. Make a list of their special powers.
Cap moved to follow them. His leg exploded in agony. He grabbed a table so he wouldn't fall.
And somebody get me an ibuprofen.